I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures right here at WCUW.
So last time, Cliff, you started to talk about how Robert Palmer wanted you to play on his record.
Yep, his record called Secrets. That's the one with Bad Case of Loving You on it. Yeah, he sent this guy, Dave Harper. I found out his name was Dave Harper later. It was a very thick Cockney accent, to come down and fetch me. Evidently, he was working for Robert at the time, but I found out later he was Traffic's road manager, which, to me, I could have picked his brain for about three eons, you know, because Traffic was, to me, Winwood and those guys. I mean, come on, you know, back to the Spencer Davis group with Steve Winwood. Wow, amazing. So anyways, we get up to the studio, Compass Point, and the record called Secrets had already been recorded. It was essentially done. Robert said, well, you know, set up and so on. I'm getting ready. And I said, what do you, you know, kind of not unlike the Alan Toussaint story, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? Right? And he looked at me and he said, play. Just play. So they put on, I think I did three cuts on that record, maybe four. They just ran the tape and let me and had me play. I found the key and just played. Run through one and then go.
Yeah, nice.
So that was a real interesting experience, without a doubt. And Robert knew what he wanted, you know, but he wanted that spontaneous fire, if you will. Because he had heard me play on the American Standard album. And of course, Robert was on Island as well. At the time, he was living right across the street from the studio, from Compass Point. Beautiful little house. Hardworking guy. He's not with us anymore either. Which really surprised me because, well, he smoked. But all those English guys smoked like smokestacks. He worked hard. He worked real hard at trying to build his career.
Yeah, well, that was huge, the videos back then.
Well, after that, it was, Secrets was his first departure from the blue-eyed soul thing, which was like, Give Me an Inch Girl and Pressure Drop, and, you know, even Sneaking Sally Through the Alley was kind of blue-eyed soul, what we call blue-eyed soul. And then he started to deviate. It's like Doctor, Bad Case of Loving You was, you know, kind of rocky. And so from then on, he realized, maybe this is the way to go. Because I think the record after Secrets was something called Clues. And then he connected with the Power Station guys, with those two guys from Duran Duran. And Gordon Edwards produced it at the Power Station, which was an amazing sounding record. But for those of you who care about recording studios, that album, the Power Station, is the way that studio sounds. So I did a track on a Joe Cocker album later, a couple of years later, on the Cocker album called Don't Drink the Water. And that was done. We did that at the Power Station. And you can't, the room sounded the way it sounded. That like gated thing, but incredibly positive energy. And of course, the rest of it is history. Robert's Simply Irresistible and the rest of them around that time were just monsters for Robert. Yep. Really made it for him. And it was great because he paid a lot of dues and did a lot of hard work many years before that. That was the Robert Palmer episode. What happened around that time that I'm talking about now, again, this is 1980-81. Somehow I was having another conversation with Chris Blackwell, because Chris owned a house. He owned Compass Point Studios. He owned Island Records. He owned everything. He asked me about Joe. It was a very straightforward question. He said, is Joe still drinking? And I said, unlike most people at the time would say, oh, no, he's got to be fine. He's got to give it up. And I said, what do you think, Chris? Joe's never going to stop drinking. He comes from a drinking culture. Sometimes he overdoes it. But his amazing talent and ability to sing these songs the way only no one but him can sing is prevalent, and it rises above the rest of it. And lo and behold, a month later, I find out Chris signed Joe to Island. So the subsequent album then was now Sheffield Steel, which was mainly recorded with this amazing rhythm section, Sly Dunbar and Robbie Shakespeare, and a few of the people from the Talking Heads, and a great guitar player named Barry Reynolds, a keyboard player named Wally Badaroo, who they called Prophet. It was a concept. Chris produced it. It was kind of a concept record. They flew me down to record on it. So I went down and back down to Nassau, did a couple of tracks, and everybody was happy. It was really fun. And Chris pulled me aside and he said, Cliff, I really love what you did there, and I'm just ready to explode. And then he said, but I can't use it. And I said, well, why? He said, it'll take the record to a place that I don't envision. If you listen to Sheffield Steel, it had a very reggae feel, and I was rocking it. I mean, to the point, Sly Dunbar and Robbie Shakespeare, bass player and drummer, traveled with a guy named Sticky, who just played tambourine with a stick.
Nice.
Sticky was great. And that's just a little sidebar. But so it was, I went down to do it, but it didn't get on the record because Chris didn't envision it. Again, he's old school, you know, concept. It's not almost like a concept album. It'd be like, you can bring in Clapton to play on While My Guitar Gently Weeps, but Clapton's not going to play on Sgt. Pepper. You know,
sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah, you know, the guy can do it. Not that I'm Clapton. That's not the point. The point is that you play the way you play, and it makes the music and record sound the way you contribute to it and with your thing. And if the producer doesn't envision it, what your contribution is going to be, oh, there you go. You know, it didn't work out. So I was kind of crestfallen, but I didn't lose my job. I just didn't wind up on that album. And here's a great point. At the same time, we had done Up Where We Belong, which was in that movie Officer and a Gentleman. Mega ballad, monster ballad. An aside story to that was Joe would call me a lot of times in the middle of the night. Phone would ring about 3 o'clock in the morning, and Sue Ann would answer the phone, and you'd hear Joe would say, "Cliff?" yeah. All right. How are you doing, Joe? Fine. Listen, I've got a question. This song, "Up Where We Belong." What do you think of it? Now, at that time, a lot of the demos came through me to go to Joe because there was a lot of junk that I didn't want to clog him up with. So the cassettes came to me, and certain ones that we both would agree to get through to him went to him. And when he asked me about Up Where We Belong, this is my really claim to fame, I said, I wouldn't do it. He said, why? I said, someone else trying to ram the arrangement of U.S. A Beautiful Down Your Throat again with a rubato piano intro and you know, this beautiful lush ballad. And Joe, to his majesty, says, I don't know. I think there's something there. Well, for those of you who don't know, Up Where We Belong won a Grammy and an Oscar. And it was a platinum single. And that's pretty serious. That's a million records. A million singles.
Wow.
I can pick them, huh? So at the same time, this record is flying up the charts. It's monstrous. And Chris Blackwell wouldn't put it on Sheffield Steel. He wouldn't even package it with Sheffield Steel. Again, it wasn't part of that vision that he had for Sheffield Steel. So that was a one album deal. After that, No More Island. And I'm not sure why, to be honest with you, but I don't think Sheffield Steel sold many, you know. It didn't sell a monstrous number of records. It was starting to build, but it didn't sell a monstrous number of records.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.